T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And good morning. Welcome to this edition of Healthy Matters. It's going to be another open line show today, meaning your general health questions for Dr. David Hilden, your host. And that's either phone calls or text messages. We'll give you that number in just a second. Good morning to you, Dr. Hilden. I can well imagine you had another busy week.
Good morning, Denny. It has been a pretty busy week at the hospital. It's so good to hear your voice again. I miss our in-person studio work. As listeners may or may not know, you and I are not in the same room like we have been for the last 11 and a half years. So I do miss that, but it's good to hear your voice. And just a quick shout out to mothers. Happy Mother's Day to everybody who's a mom.
Yes, all the moms and grandmothers and mothers-in-law, all of the moms out there.
You got that. Happy Mother's Day to Julie, my wife, Sandy, yours, to my mom, Joan, my sisters, and everybody. I won't list everybody I know as much as I might like to. Yeah, it's been a busy week at the hospital, Danny. You know, and I was remarking to somebody else, as spring hits and such a beautiful season in Minnesota, I just love spring and getting outside and watching the birds are out. And Julie and I have been seeing these two giant barred owls by our house. And it's all this growth and everything. And then I go into the hospital and we're actually busier than ever with this COVID thing. And I was remarking what a kind of a juxtaposition of two different things. Beautiful spring outside and inside. We're I don't want to say we're full, but we're getting more full with patients with COVID. We have many, many, many dozens of patients with COVID in the hospital. And so it just seems like two different worlds. It has been busy, but the thing I noticed about our hospital operations with this COVID business is that we're doing a pretty good job in the state of Minnesota. Our ICUs, though nearly full, are doing a good job with patients, and our regular hospital beds, which are also pretty crowded with COVID patients, they're getting good care, and the mortality rates, the people who are not surviving it, seems to be, at least in our ICUs in Minnesota, a little bit better than it had been in some other places, which I think is a little bit of a testament to what good medical care can do, and more importantly, what good planning can do. We planned for it for March and April, and now things are going, you know, it's an awful disease. It is more serious, I think, than people are still even understanding. But at the same time, we're doing okay with our medical care. So it's a grind. I was remarking to you earlier, I'm getting weary of COVID, as I'm sure many people are. But that being said, I'm really happy about springtime and the promise of a great summer and getting back to some normalcy in the coming months.
Let's hope it's soon, for sure. We're already getting text messages and calls. If you do have a question, again, it's an open line show. That means your general health questions. We're not talking about any particular topic, although I'm sure Dr. Hilden will be getting a lot of the COVID-19 questions as usual. Here is the number that applies to both text messages and phone calls, 651-989-9226. So if you do have a question, don't wait. We always tend to get so busy and loaded with both phone calls and text messages. We want to help out as many people as we can. So call or text right now, 651-989-9226. I tell you what, Dr. Hill, let's go to the phones. I think Brian is calling from Minneapolis with a question. Go ahead, Brian. Thanks for calling.
I had a pneumonia vaccine in 2005 when I got a pacemaker. Will that help lessen the effects of corona?
Hey, Brian, thanks for your call. Unfortunately, it won't. It's still the right thing to do, but there's kind of a two-part answer to that. As a direct safety against COVID, no, because COVID is a virus, and the pneumonia shot is for a bacteria called Streptococcal. Let me see if I get this right. Streptococcus pneumoniae. In other words, a strep infection, a bacterial infection of your lungs. So the vaccine will not help that. Indirectly, we just don't know. People who have problems with COVID are getting an inflammatory process in their lungs. The lungs are basically filling up with fluid and inflammation. That's the primary problem that people are getting into trouble with. And this vaccine won't help at all for that. It will give you some measure of protection against a second infection with a pneumonia, but that so far has not been the big problem anyway. So it was good that you got it, but it's not likely to be of much assistance with COVID.
All right, very good. We have a bunch of text messages, Doctor, already. Let's see if we can't grab a couple here. For Dr. Hilden, with the COVID-19 mutations, do you think one vaccine, when it comes, will be effective versus all strains?
That's an insightful question, because that's one of the many unanswered questions with this thing. If you think about the vaccines that we give people, some of them we give basically once or twice when you're a child. Think among those polio, measles, the measles, mumps, rubella. Many of those childhood vaccinations do indeed confer lifelong immunity, and you're done. You're just done with it. Others, think influenza comes to mind immediately, only provides protection for a few months and not a year. That's because of the rapidly changing nature of that virus. It's always a couple steps ahead of us, and so we're constantly trying to predict what strains will be in there and give the vaccine for the strains that are out there. With coronavirus, we simply don't know. Initially, we thought this one, I'm using a collective we. The scientific community did not know whether it was mutating very much. We thought maybe it wasn't, and maybe it would mean that you could get a vaccine that provided a longer-lasting immunity. But that is simply, we just don't know. There is some evidence that it might be mutating here and there, but this is all really, really early in the research. The technology to make the vaccines, we know what to do. It's just trying to get a handle on how this particular bug behaves. So that is one of the biggest questions of all. How long will we have immunity, even when there is a vaccine available? And I think we'll probably know that in the coming years, but we probably won't know that yet this year.
Yeah, very good question. Texter wants to know if you think our immune systems are suffering because we are so isolated.
You know, that's a really interesting angle. I always love Healthy Matters listeners, because that's a good angle to think about. Our immune systems are meant to be challenged. That's why, you know, we no longer say to parents of toddlers, I mean, I'm kidding here, but I had an allergist friend, Dr. Sweet, said, let them eat dirt. It'll get their immune system going. I'm being a little facetious there, but our immune systems do respond to the challenges it sees every day out in the community. All day long, our immune systems are working their muscle to fight what they encounter. And now, since we're all sitting at home, I wonder if there are fewer pathogens for our immune systems to react to. I don't have any evidence that that's the case. It's an interesting sort of thought experiment. And with all of the hand washing and gels and all that, we're all becoming so clean that you wonder if our immune systems are not getting challenged. I don't have any kind of expert answer to that question, but it's an interesting thought. I don't think it means we need to do anything differently, because our immune systems need all the help they can get for this coronavirus. But it is kind of an interesting thing to think about.
All right, very good. I tell you what, we need to take a quick break, doctors. Let's do that and come back. We have callers, we have texters here on Healthy Matters in the Twin Cities. It's 40 degrees right now. We'll be right back with more Healthy Matters. And good morning. Welcome back to this portion of Healthy Matters here on CCO. Denny Long here with Dr. David Hilden, your host, answering your questions. It's an open line show, which means we're not talking about any particular topic, certainly COVID-19 being at the top of the list, of course. Dr. Hilden, we have callers, we have texters, so maybe we should get to them. Sarah, I think, is first up. You're calling from New Brighton. Sarah, you're on with the doctor.
Thank you. My husband and I are in our 70s. And we have been staying at home, wearing a mask when we do go out, which is only to the grocery store. But my question is, what happens if one of us does get the virus? Should the other one stay home, quarantine, or exit the house?
That's a great question, too. It reminds me of an analogy that we talk a little bit about here at my house, about the bubble. Like, how big is your bubble? You know, and who's in your bubble? And it's kind of this funny analogy that the people we're quarantining with, the ones that we're living with, are inside our bubble. And it is true that the fewer people that are in your bubble that have been exposed, that's a good thing. And so people who live in households of six people have a larger bit of a risk. And people are, you know, so that's why the size of the group matters. So if you have been at home with just you and your husband, and no one's been sick, you're actually quite safe. But of course, we can't just stay at home forever. And so every trip out is a slight breach in your bubble. So if one of you gets it and is at home, what do you do? That's a hard question. But what we're suggesting to people, and this is not based on my personal experience or any great knowledge of it, but what seems to make sense, is that when someone in your home that you are quarantining with gets sick, really do your best to do sort of an isolation within your home. Maybe have that person have their own bedroom and bathroom for a week or two while they're ill. Wipe things down as much as you possibly can. Certainly don't share a lot of the same air in the same room if you can. There's a limit to how much you can do that. But that's what I would suggest. If you could leave the house and live elsewhere, I guess that would be just ideal. But then you would probably be exposing yourself to risks elsewhere. So it might not be as good as it sounds. So we're not recommending people move out if you have somebody who's infected. We just recommend you step up your game as best you can to isolate that person at home. Maybe have the luxury of a spare bedroom or a spare bathroom and use different towels and different all household items. That's what we're suggesting now. But again, that's just based on what we think is probably the best way to go. We don't have a ton of expert knowledge on what's best.
Here's a text, Dr. Hilden, that somebody obviously is detail-oriented. It says this: I have been keeping a spreadsheet since March 11 of any contact I might have had, including grocery or hardware store visits and curbside pickup. It also includes distance visits with neighbors. Do you think this helps if contact tracing is needed at some point?
This texter is the dream patient for an epidemiologist. I need you on our staff, whoever texted this, because that's essentially what contact tracing is. And it is going to be a job class of the future. I'm a contact tracer. What we do in a public health realm, not a clinical realm, but the public health experts, when they get a positive, you do what's called contact tracing. Everybody becomes a little Sherlock Holmes. You call and you ask, okay, where have you been? Who have you contacted with? And they do a risk analysis and they decide how many people need to be protected from your exposure. That's difficult if you're in a public area. Say you're going to some public event, as some people are hoping to do. You can't do contact tracing because we don't know who you were in contact with. But for this person, the contact tracer would have a fairly clear idea of who they were with, and it would be a much easier task. We're not asking everybody to keep spreadsheets on who you were with, but if you it is partially why we're asking people to limit your exposure, so that if you do get exposed and we have to ask you, who have you been in contact with, you'll have at least some vague idea of who you've been in contact with. And it kind of illustrates why public gatherings of groups are so dangerous, because it would make contact tracing virtually impossible.
All right, let's go back to the phones. I believe Quinn is waiting there in Coon Rapids. Quinn, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I have two questions. The first one is, what's your opinion of CBD oil? The second one is, I'm 84 years young, and I have a prostate problem, weak stream. And I was just wondering, can that also cause you to have weakness in your legs?
Great question. The first CBD oil stands for cannabidiol. I barely got that out on early on a Sunday morning. Cannabidiol, something like that. It is the non-hallucinogenic portion of the plant that also produces marijuana, which is a different chemical substance. CBD oil has a little bit of promise, but it's unproven. So that is the caveat to that, is that we just don't have a clue. It does have a little bit of an effect in reducing seizures in children. It does seem to have some, at least anecdotal, effect in reducing anxieties in people. When I say anecdotal, this is just what people tell us, so it's not scientific. So we don't know. So I can't officially recommend it to anybody. On the other hand, it's also not thought to have any side effects. You know, CBD oil appears to be, and I'm just saying, appears to be quite safe. And so if your wallet can stand it and you find it to have some beneficial effect on your mood or your anxieties or things like that, I don't think it's probably harmful to give it a try. As for the other, I'm not sure about weak legs with prostate problems. That would be a little bit unusual. But if you have true weakness in your legs, that can be a sign of neurologic problems in your lower back, in your spine, where the nerves come out of your lower back. So it may or may not be related to your prostate. Probably not. But if you, let's just take it to the worst case scenario. If your prostate were to have some cancer and that cancer had spread to your lower back, that could cause weakness, but that's a couple steps removed. We do tell people with new weakness in your legs. I don't mean just a little soreness or my legs are tired, but I'm truly weak. I'm having trouble standing up and walking because my legs are weak. We do ask you to see your doctor for that because of the possibility of neurologic problems in your lower back. So I would encourage you, Quinta, to at least call your doctor, have a visit, talk it through with them, even if that visit's virtually online by phone or on the computer, or if you have to go in to see them. I think that would be worth doing in the coming weeks. I wouldn't let it go months and months and months.
All right, I know we have to break in a couple of minutes, but here's a text that says, thanks for your show this morning. In our area, they are doing the COVID test both nasal and oral. Are they the same, and are they both reliable?
The main test that is the most reliable, you will not forget. It feels like they're sticking this swab into your brain through your nose. So the best way, it has to be way in the back. The little oral cell, I think they're doing a little rapid one, is also valuable in some degree, but it's not the gold standard, if you will. The main one is through your nose, way to the back of your nasal cavity, and it's going to feel weird, like, holy cow, how far are you sticking that swab up my nose? That is the one that we recommend for the testing. There is a rapid test that they can do real quickly, and that one is gaining popularity, and it will have a role in testing. So both are better than nothing, and the testing is actually quite good. But if you want the true blue gold standard, that's the one through your nose, with the rapid one in your mouth being another alternative in some situations.
All right, very good. We'll take a quick break here. We have another half hour of the show to go. If you have a general health question for Dr. Hilden, call it in or text it in, same number, 651-989-9226. We'll also have a look at that forecast coming up here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to this portion of Healthy Matters. This is an open line show today, your general health questions for Dr. David Hilden. And I know you want to mention a couple of things. I want to mention one thing. You're going to be on with Paul Douglas this morning. What time will that be this morning, Doctor?
Indeed, I am, Denny. Thank you. For a half an hour, from 9:15 to 9:45, I sometimes call into other shows on WCCO. I'm on with Dave Lee on Tuesday and Thursday mornings, and I'm often with Paul and Jordana, and I'm going to do a special little chat with Paul from 9:15 to 9:45 this morning. So
very good.
I hope everyone stays tuned for your money after this show, and then just keep right on listening. We'll be back on at 9:15. Hey, Denny, can I take a second to talk about nurses?
Sure, let's do that.
This is Nurses Week, and it started on the 6th, last Wednesday, and it goes for a week. And Nurses Week is a big deal every year because, you know, the biggest chunk of healthcare workers at in the system are nurses. And I never miss an opportunity, if I can, to talk about the importance of nurses, not only to patients, but to me and to other healthcare providers. They're sort of the linchpin that holds everything together. When I go to a patient's room, I come and go a few times a day, and sometimes I might spend just a few minutes because I'm running back and forth. A nurse is there all day with you. And when I'm in a clinic and I might, you know, give my what I want to do for you and talk about what orders we're going to do, it's the nurse who explains it to people. It's the nurse who has all of that knowledge of so many things and packages that knowledge in a caring attitude that is very unique in healthcare. And so I could not do my job without nurses. I don't think our patients could have anywhere near the experience they have without nurses. It happens to be the 200th anniversary of Florence Nightingale's birth. Florence Nightingale was called the Lady with the Lamp, and she is sort of the mother of nursing. And so on this Mother's Day, while we think of all of our own moms, we're going to think of the mother of nursing. It was her 200th birthday. And just a big thank you from me to each and every person out there who calls yourself a nurse and who goes to work every single day. The most important people in healthcare, I have over and over and said, are nurses. So thank you to all of our nurses on this Nurses Week and all year long. Another little thing, if you haven't checked out my blog, it's at myhealthymatters.org. I'm periodically putting little diary things about what it's like being a doctor in a pandemic. That's at myhealthymatters.org. All right, all my announcements.
All right, very good. Let's get back to the phones, Doctor. I think Lisa is calling in from Maple Grove this morning. Good morning. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I have a couple questions. I'm wondering about how long this virus lasts. Like, if you had symptoms in March, like around the 20th, 25th, would it still be going on now? And then how would you know which test to do? Like, if you had the antibody test, would that be best? And you're still having symptoms, if you had the nose swab, would it still, you know, register? And then if it passed on to somebody else, got the illness like 3-4 weeks later, would they go in, or could it be something totally different? Could it have turned into pneumonia, or how do you know which test to do then?
Thank you for calling in, Lisa. Those are good questions. We don't know exactly how long the thing sheds from your body. There's a lot we don't know. But it is a viral illness, and that tends to be a little different than bacterial illnesses in that it's a little bit more slow, what we say in medicine. It's more of an indolent infection. It doesn't hit you like a ton of bricks today and give you 104 fever like in an hour. What it does is that it's you can have many of these symptoms, headaches, shortness of breath, cough, aches, lack of smell, all those things, and they develop over a few days. It is true that when people have severe COVID, it happens very quickly. That's a different story, though. For people in the community, it's generally you feel yucky for a while, and then it gets a little bit worse day after day after day to the point where you're having trouble breathing and you're coughing. So it's possible you can have symptoms for some weeks. We're not sure exactly the course of it, but it's certainly possible. As for testing, the antibody test is not a test for current infection, and that is not yet ready for prime time. I had an antibody test as part of a medical research study, and I'm still waiting my results for that, but that is different. Down the road, we will be doing antibody tests in reputable medical centers, but there are dozens, even hundreds of antibody tests out there, most of which are not worth anything. So don't waste your money on those. We need to have accurate antibody tests and learn what they are telling us. So the tests being done at the University of Minnesota, at Mayo Clinic, at some other reputable places, those are the antibody tests we'll be using. The test in your nasal swab is what you need if you wonder if you have an infection, the one in your nose. That one is only good, however, for that moment. It tells you if you have it now, right now. Tomorrow, you could have it again. And as some of the news reports that you've seen is like, well, I'm negative. I was tested negative, so I don't have it. That's not true. When you test negative, you didn't have it at that moment, but you could have it now. You could have picked it up 2 hours later. So if you have symptoms that you're worried about might be this, the idea is to go get tested. And Minnesota has the capability to test you. We are testing anybody with symptoms. So if you are still having a symptom, I encourage you to go to your healthcare clinic and get tested. At Hennepin, we're testing in Richfield and in Brooklyn Park and in South Minneapolis and downtown. We're testing people who come into our clinics with symptoms. I encourage people, if you have symptoms, to get tested with a nasal swab.
Very good. Excuse me. Geraldine, I think, is calling in from Fairfax. Geraldine, thank you for waiting. What is your question?
I have an appointment for my blood, elevated platelets at 500,000 and tomorrow. And I'm wondering what questions I should ask and how serious is it?
Yeah, thank you for your call. It's serious on all likelihood. You know, I can never say for sure about an individual test. But your platelets are the little, teeny little structures, little cells, if you will. They're not really like they're a cell, but they're small little things that form blood clots in your when you cut yourself. So without a platelet, you get a paper cut, you're going to bleed forever. And the platelet just goes to the rescue and clots up the thing, so you stop bleeding. You have just barely above the normal amount. Which is more like 450,000, but 500,000 is not all that high. I wouldn't worry at all about it. I probably would just tell a patient of mine, come back in the future and we'll check it again. It could be any number of things. They go up and down. The vast majority of conditions would not be dangerous. They don't get dangerous till they're way higher than that. There are some conditions that of overproduction of platelets that can lead you to have a clotting problem. In other words, that you would clot too much. But that is not at the level of 500,000. This could be you were dehydrated when you took the test even. It doesn't necessarily mean anything's wrong with you. There's always a few people that are a little higher than the test ranges because that's just normal, that a few people are outliers. It could be that you just run a little higher. It could be that you were dehydrated. It's unlikely that you have a primary blood problem. But I would just go in and ask for that follow-up, and I wouldn't worry too much about it. But I would get it followed up.
All right, very good. Here's a text that says, is it safe? The reason I'm laughing is we just watched an old Dustin Hoffman film called Marathon Man a couple of nights ago. But this texter says, is it safe to go to the dentist tomorrow for my 6-month cleaning? Did you ever see that movie?
You know what? It's been a long time, but I think I did. That was a while ago, wasn't it, Denny? That movie?
Oh, a long time ago, yes.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Many years ago.
Safe question is a relative one. It depends what you mean by safe. There's a risk to everything. And what we're moving towards on elective things and is a risk-benefit ratio. If you have a rotten tooth that is hurting you, it is riskier to do nothing. It's better to go in. However, for your usual dental cleaning, we weren't having people doing that a month ago because the risk of going in was more important than just a routine visit. That sort of calculation is shifting. It is now more likely that, okay, we've put things off for a month or two. It's time to start going back and doing some of those things. I assure you that at least the dentists at HCMC where I am are doing every precaution possible to keep everybody safe, as they always have. But it is true that your mouth wide open with somebody putting their hands in there is a little bit more risky than if you weren't doing that. So it just call your dentist and see what is the nature of the work you need doing. This is not the time to do cosmetic work, perhaps. Wait a couple months for that. But it is the time to get things fixed. And so I think it, your eye doctor, your dentist, those kinds of things are important. I wouldn't risk the health of your teeth or your eyes by waiting too long. So consult your dentist about that. So that's kind of the, is it safe? It's a relative term.
Yes. I know we have to break here. I just, day before yesterday, received an email from my dental office, which contained probably three huge paragraphs of what they're expecting their patients to do now. You cannot wait in the waiting room, things like that. Gloves, masks, and all of that. Very lengthy email. So I think you're right. The dental offices are taking all sorts of precautions for everybody's safety.
Yeah, and I would follow
Let's take this quick break. Yes. Yes, to the T. All right. Hang on, Dr. Hilden. We're going to take this quick break. And callers, stay there. Texters, we're going to grab as many calls and texts as time will allow this morning on Healthy Matters. And good morning. Welcome back to Healthy Matters, an open line show today with Dr. Hilden. And Dr. Hilden, we have plenty of calls and many text messages, so let's see if we can't help some more folks out here. Ann has been waiting there in Woodbury with a question. Thank you, Ann. What is your question?
I'm a woman in my 80s, and a family member has passed away, and the funeral is going to be in North Dakota. As much as I'd like to go, my kids and I feel it's too risky. What do you think?
I think I'm with you. I don't recommend it now. It's one of the casualties of this pandemic that is just heart-wrenching, is the need to maybe not be at those milestone events that we wish we could. And when can we? I'm not sure. But the going out to any kind of gathering, even a smaller gathering, does raise some risk, particularly for those in their 80s. Even if you're around a half a dozen people or 10 people, that would be, in my opinion, a risk I would suggest you not take. It could be that it goes off just fine. Everybody is able to grieve together and nobody gets sick, but that would definitely be a risk. If you did go, invest in a very large supply of wipes and wipe everything down, every gas pump handle, every doorknob, everything you come in contact with. And when you're at the event, don't hug folks and stay far away. And I hate to say it, but wear a mask as well. So if my recommendation is that would be a relatively high risk for you. I'm so sorry for the loss, but I think that's the best advice I can give you.
Dr. Hilden, a texter, wants to know, how effective is washing your hands when the water is cold? Often, they say, when you wash your hands at a store or restaurant, the water's cold. Are there any health laws, the texter says, regarding how warm the water should be?
That's a great question, and I don't have a good expert answer. I'll just tell you personal experience. I was washing my hands this morning in my own and a bathroom sink first thing in the morning, and it takes a little while for the water to get warm. And I'm thinking, gee, this is taking a while. Is this working? I was thinking that just about an hour ago. The act of washing your hands, we ask you to do it for 20 seconds because there's a mechanical part of that. We need you to get all the nooks and crannies of your hand. The soap also breaks down the membranes around viruses. So there's a mechanical thing. There's a mild chemical effect as well. What does the heat of the water do? I don't really know. Clearly, washing your hands with cold water for 20 seconds and doing a good, thorough job with a soap is really good. If whether it's better to have warmer water, if it's just lukewarm, that's probably not doing much more. Certainly boiling water would, but then you'd also scald your hands. So I guess I don't have a good answer other than just those random musings about it. It's probably better that the water is a little bit warmer, but I don't have in my head at what temperature it would kill the virus. The simple mechanical act of using soap and breaking down the virus is the most important thing.
Here's away from the virus a question. A texter wants to know about a shingles shot. I received, they said, my first shingles shot in November. Is there a timeline when I need to get my second shot?
Yeah, now would be good. I know it's a little hard to get in, but you need to do it at least a month or more after the first one. So if you had it in November, you could certainly get your second shingles shot now. Granted, it's hard to get into clinics for more elective things, but call your clinic. Over the coming weeks, we would be ramping up more elective kinds of things.
All right, let's try to grab a phone call before we head out of here. Steve is calling from Pine City this morning. Steve, you're on with Dr. Hilden.
Yeah, I've got a question.
Are you there, Steve?
On data. Yes, I'm here. I've got a question on data. Do we have the number of non-COVID flu cases and deaths in the last 2 months compared to how it compares to the ranges from past years? In other words, how are the standard flu cases and deaths now versus other years?
Thanks for your question. This was a light flu year. We're not seeing much at all now. We were earlier in the year. It was weird. We were seeing influenza B, but this was a lighter flu year. It's very interesting that the COVID cases this year would be an awful flu year just from COVID, in only in 2 months. So it would have been a very bad, a horrendous flu year, based just on COVID. But the influenza itself this year was mercifully not so bad, and we're sort of near the very, very, very tail end of that. We're seeing very flu influenza cases. We should all cross our fingers that that is the case next year as well, because if we had an awful flu year in addition to what we've just seen in COVID, it's going to be a rough next winter. And so I'm really hopeful that we can have a second year in a row of a little less flu.
All right, let's see if we can grab a text. Here's one that came in a bit ago. It says, hello, my 22-year-old daughter traveled to Knoxville 5 days ago for work. She returns tomorrow. She traveled via the airlines. What precautions should we take? Should she quarantine for 14 days?
I would recommend that, yes. She has been at a higher exposure risk. She could very well have picked it up. Hopefully she didn't, but she could well have. She might be asymptomatic from that. So, yes, I would have that person for 14 days not be around others. If you can't be out of the same house, that person should have her own room and her own bathroom if possible and try not to touch the same things. If you can be in separate facilities, that's probably a good idea. I know that's not always possible, but that's probably a good idea.
We have about 60 seconds to go. Maybe we could do a couple of things. Salute all the moms out there and the nurses as well today.
Yeah. Happy Mother's Day to everybody. I hope people are able to do this safely, but have some reconnection with your mom. Do it virtually if possible. Stand very, very, very far apart and don't do it in big groups. But happy Mother's Day to everybody and to nurses. You are the heroes of medicine. Thank you for everything you are doing, and happy Nurses Weekend. And they're the people I work with the most. And so I, with a mask on, I'm looking into nurses' eyes. Thank you for what you do.
And next week's show, what are we going to be doing next week, Doctor?
Very interesting show next week. A doctor that I work with, one of my colleagues, Dr. Matt Klein, also happens to be a Minnesota state senator representing the good people of District 52. Dr. Klein and Senator Klein is going to be on the show with me. I've asked him to come on, talk about the politics in Minnesota. We're going to try to keep it civil, everybody. But we're going to talk about what it's like to be a doctor and a Minnesota senator. He's one of only four.
Have a good week, Dr. Hilden. And please join us next week for more Healthy Matters.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.